Welcome back. Episode number 3 and let's see, segment number 2. It is Baltimore Positive. We are in Baltimore City. We're in Johns Hopkins University. The great Senator Barbara Mikulski joining us, former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler joining us. I think we left off with Highland Town local and census, I think, is where we were.
Well, I think it's neighborhoods.
Blue-collar jobs.
And the importance of blue-collar jobs. Again, so interesting. It's almost, and I know. Full disclosure, you and Dutch haven't talked in preparation for this appearance. Dutch talked a lot about blue-collar jobs and the importance of blue-collar jobs. So, again, all the way back to 71, here we are, 2019. Let's talk jobs and what it means to the city.
And I also want to talk about how to solve problems. So, first of all, one of the things that we have faced has been the deindustrialization of our country. Our jobs have been on a fast track to Mexico or a slow boat to China. We fought it. The delegation has fought it. Helen Bentley, of blessed memory, fought it, and I teamed up with Helen and so on. But that's what happened. Now, where are we? So you have new things coming, like Trade Point, down at Sparrows Point, and we wish them all the success in the world. So where are these?
Well, I'm going to stop you. I want you to come back, but I want to stop you, and you're going to be embarrassed. But everybody's got to know this, Nestor, and not everybody knows this. Steel went out of business during the Kamenetz administration. Finally, it was gone, doors shut. And Kevin Kamenetz got a lot of different advice from a lot of different people. I was in the room when the senator called him. I know you remember the call well. And she said, Kevin, whatever you do, don't lie to these people.
Well, LNG was a part of this, right?
Well, that was in a discussion. It was sort of a separate discussion. Okay. This was Steele going away. Senator says, Kevin, don't lie to these folks. They've been through enough. Don't pretend Steele is coming back to Sparrows Point. You know it's not. I know it's not. Talk to them about creating a new Sparrows Point with a new generation of jobs. You remember that conversation,
yes,
Senator?
Because what I believed was the worst thing that you can do to people is lie to them, manipulate them, because that's another form of it. And also, don't promise nostalgia. We cannot engage in nostalgia economics. Those jobs are not coming back. And even if they did, it would be all these little robots running around. It would not be steel workers. So what did we had to level with them, which, by the way, Bethlehem Steel didn't always level right with the delegation about their intent. And
my father was a Bethlehem Steel worker, so I'm keenly aware
so you know
what my mother got after my father died. It looked like $100 a month, literally.
Yes. and the Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, was one of the ones who threw Bethlehem Steel's pension into pension guarantee and reduced health care benefits by 30%. But other than that, let's talk about the jobs now. So way back when I was just really getting started in the Congress, came the cry for a 50-foot channel. We knew the Panama Canal Treaty had been formed and passed, and there were going to be new, huge ships coming through the Panama Canal. We wanted them to come to Baltimore. We just didn't want to be a barge port coming out of Philadelphia. It meant we needed a 50-foot channel. But when you dredge for 50 feet, you need federal funds, and you also need to have a place to put the dredge. The solution of, again, the downtown types was to dump it on Hart Miller Island, just off of the of a blue-collar waterfront community, very spunky and very outspoken.
I shouted with them, where
I said, if it's that great, dump it on Gibson Island instead of Hart Miller Island. However, while we became at a standstill, Harry Hughes, elected governor, you know what Harry did? He actually listened to the people and heard their concerns that the dike holding the spoils with chemicals and God knows what, mercury and PSBs and all that, what would it mean? He actually listened. There was a North Carolina professor that questioned the safety of the dike. He listened, but he actually listened to the people of Hart Miller. And he said this to them, if I get an independent group to assess the safety of the dike, with, for which you could have a, to say yes or no on my expert, would you go along with it? They, for the first time, had been listened to, decided to roll the dice. Governor Hughes turned to Red Swolman here at Hopkins, one of the preeminent engineers at the Whiting School of Engineer and well-known in this field. Professor Wolman, Dr. Wolman said, the dike's okay, but this is what you need to do. There were about 5-7 things that needed to do to guarantee the safety. Because the people had been respected, because they had been involved in the process, because Professor Wolman had also consulted with them, as well as engineering experts, realizing that the people were experts in their own community, out came the agreement. They agreed to what Governor Hughes was proposing with all the engineering safeguards. And now, as of today, we have Hart Miller, which is now a waterfront waterfowl preserve. Actually functions as a little bit of a barrier island to protect Hart Miller. Remember her terrible hurricane, Isabel.
Isabel, sure.
And we have our 50-foot channel. The 50-foot channel, if you talk with Governor Hogan and his Secretary of Transportation, we are enjoying the biggest port growth of any port on the East Coast. Now, what does that mean? Yeah, a lot of it is robotic. You unload those ships now. It's not some guy from Locust Point with a hook in his hand where he could be crushed by cargo. It is automated, but you can do this with a high school diploma or a community college, a background. They're operating and unloading and all this, but these are blue-collar jobs at white-collar pay, and they are the port's doing well, they're doing well, and then it's the pipeline, it's the truck drivers, and we can go down, what does it mean to have this? We're the largest port for automobiles coming into the East Coast. And your delegation worked across party lines. Particularly, it was Senator Mathias and Senator Sarbanes, then Senator Mikulski and Senator Sarbanes, working with Helen Bentley, the delegation, the Democrats in the delegation. We knew that dredging did not have a lawn sign on it, that dredging did not have a bumper sticker on it. Dredging had something on it called jobs. And that's what we went to work. Every year we got more dredge, and then we have this success story. It is a decade-long story, but it started and was able to happen because Harry Hughes said, why don't we listen to the people?
Well, and it's interesting. You know, we've been talking for the past few weeks now. We've been talking education, hospitals, arts and cultural institutions, sports teams. We have to add, it's great that you talk about that and remind us about the port. We have to talk about this great port and an asset to Baltimore City. That when you're talking Baltimore positive, as you said, it's the largest growing port in the United States. That puts food on people's tables. And that's how you change lives around, right, Senator? You give them a job, you give them a good paying job, and then families contribute to Baltimore positive.
Well, we have to come back to education. So now let's go to Trade Point and let's go to Amazon. So, you know, people can talk about Amazon, whether they like them, they don't, whatever. And people say, well, we missed the headquarters. And I said, stop whining and start winning. Don't think to a single political leader to solve all problems. For as much as I liked William Donald Schaefer, and I was Schaeferized, we've got to get off thinking that you need a mayor who is a miracle worker and is going to solve all problems. We need to be in it together. Now, when you look at what is happening with the jobs coming in robotics, because that's what Amazon is. So where the old GM plant was on Browning Highway is now an Amazon warehouse depot. Look what Under Armour just opened, their distribution facility. Okay, in order to have a job in robotics, you really do need a community college background. Essex has a fantastic program. Baltimore City Community College has an excellent program. Many veterans have gone in. But guess what? You've got to have a course in high school algebra. High school algebra. And if you don't go to high school, and take high school algebra, you're going to be shut out from even being able to take the courses that enable you to get the jobs today, and with the coming of artificial intelligence, the jobs of tomorrow. And it starts with education, and it starts with then motivation. There's a wonderful nonprofit called the Algebra Project to show that math is elegant. We all love the movie Hidden Figures, and Dr. Johnson. I received the Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama the same day she did.
Wow.
I actually met her. It brings tears to my eyes to have the honor of meeting this great lady. But it starts with math. You can't have math unless you go to school.
It's so interesting, Senator. I've heard, you know, the years I spent on the education side, I heard more than one person say that we have to understand, it's exactly what you're just saying, Algebra 1 is a civil rights issue. Passing of Algebra 1 is actually a civil rights issue because you can't go on to these jobs of the 21st century without a basic understanding of Algebra 1 and at least some simple math. And so it's at its core. It's an education.
Says the social studies teacher.
Right, says the social studies teacher.
It's very serious in the sense that, and we have to say goodbye to the stereotypes. Oh, this group doesn't do math. Right. Oh, this group only does. Whatever. You know what? If Dr. Johnson were here, she would say, math is not only elegant, but it is universal. Universal. Right. Do you know that one of our great mathematicians, Brett Kerwin, who goes on to be Chancellor of the University of Maryland and now the Kerwin Commission that will fund education, mathematician. At one of his international conferences, he met this Russian guy named Sergey Brin. Moshe Brin, Dr. Moshe Brin. Jimmy Carter helps get some of the Jewish people out of the Soviet Union. Dr. Moshe can come to the United States if he has a sponsor. Dr. Brett goes to the Board of Regents, say, can we come? They come. He comes as a very junior professor at Maryland, but gets in anyway. He has this son, Sergey, little quirky, but a genius. Sergey graduates from Prince George's Schools, University of Maryland, goes out to California and works in one of those garages. That's Sergey Brin, who founded Google.
Wow.
Maryland roots,
Maryland public schools, Maryland public university, Maryland open door.
Well,
go ahead, Don.
No, I was just going. You know, when we talk about all of this, and we talk about you just sitting here with you, you start to feel a sense of hope about the city, and know that there's a way to turn this around. Whoever the next mayor is, if they put together what I'll call a kitchen cabinet or a group of advisors, and you're on that group, we asked Dutch this, and you're on that group, forget who the mayor is, what would you be telling the mayor to focus on from day one? Say, from day one, here's what you've got to do. I mean, you know government, you know local government, state government. What would you tell the mayor, whoever it is?
Well, first of all, what the city needs is trust and trust in its elected leadership and a new sense of self-confidence that we can do this. And in many ways, we're already doing it.
Well, Governor Schaefer's era was like cheerleading to some degree, right?
Before we go off to nostalgia Schaeferism, let me finish this point because it's very important. Because the habit of Baltimore is to drift into nostalgia. Oh, Schaefer, when are we going to have another Schaefer? We're never going to have another Schaefer. And even if he were here today, the economics of disinvestment and deindustrialization would be working against him. So we need to get real. And the way we get real is to think of Baltimore as a mosaic. The social glue that holds us together is respect, listening, the elected and the business leadership also needs to listen, and we need to continue our public investments in public institutions, our schools, our libraries, and also the safe spaces and places. You know how you talked about sports. I was a library gal. I was a Girl Scout gal, working on my little badges and so on. When I went to the Senate, I worked on another badge. It was called the Port of Baltimore, or funding for NIH that was so important to your family.
Can I ask you about that? Because there was something there, and I was a Cub Scout. We blow all that stuff. And something that and Don's whole notion to do this, Senator, is that I didn't take his social studies class. I got to him. He was already an assistant principal at that point, so I never got to take his social studies class. The part of the civics, the civics part of this, of people having citizenship, and I don't know where it's tied to college or getting a driver's license or getting a job or being eligible to do things, but I think if we just walked around on the typical streets of Baltimore or any city in America and just asked people about citizenship, so much is quoted about, this is my constitutional this, or and I don't think people really know, have I didn't pay attention enough in social studies in 1981 or 82 or 83. And it's all sitting there, as you said, in a library. But the citizenship part of all the things you're talking about, respect, these were things I was taught in the first or second grade, literally. How to listen, how to share, how to be polite, how to take turns, how to give way in traffic. You know, this simple citizenship things that I think that have eroded, that I think that there's a message there for people.
Right. I think you said it. But anyway, to come back to your question, you see, we have to look at our public schools, our public libraries, our public spaces, like the parks that enable people to do this. And then there is the support for the nonprofit sector, which does so much good. My gosh, look at the good work that Associated Catholic Charities does, Associated Black Charities, Associated Jewish Charities, and what all they do in our community related to education, empowerment, structured after school activities, care for the fragile and the homebound, and so on. So I think that's it. But when you are going to listen, you have to then follow through. Because what I found, and I think what was characteristic of being successful in politics, is to the best of your ability, you have to have relentless follow-through.
Well, let's take one of those, and I know we're coming up on another break, but I want to take, I was struck by your career again, and I look where you cooperated when you were in Congress with Republicans to focus on child care. When we talk about jobs, it seems to me that jobs and child care go hand in hand, and somehow you were able to forge this consensus on child care. It's hard to imagine us forging consensus on anything today, and I know you still have lots of friends there who probably just want to pull their hair out. Tell me how Senator Mikulski worked across the aisle to get agreement on child care. And why you focused on child care?
Well, first of all, when I got into the politics, it was the second wave of the American women's movement. The first wave in this century, in the old century, the 20th century, was women getting the right to vote, which we are commemorating in 2020 with the ratification of the 19th Amendment. It'll be kicked off in Congress, and actually, on May 21st, the House passed the resolution. May 21st, 1919, the House passed the 19th Amendment to send on to the states. They sent it to the Senate, and it was passed in the Senate on June 4th. Then became the race for ratification, two-thirds needed. You know, the founders, rightfully so, didn't make it easy to amend the Constitution. Though they knew it was a work in progress, they didn't want just caught up in the actions and passions. So on August 26th, 1920, Tennessee ratified it. Maryland didn't ratify it to the 1940s. We were the last. We were among the last. We were among the last. So Maryland wasn't always a blue state.
We weren't in the forefront of that issue.
No, and it was the legacy of some dark days in our past. So
fast forward me again to child care, because I'm interested in the process. That's a big issue. And when you talk about millennials and others, it seems to me that one of the things
First of all, when I said I was the second wave of the American women's movement, more women were going to work. And what is it when you go to work, particularly if you've moved around, or even grannies were going to work too. So the old idea that some lady in a babushka was going to take care of your child. So it was in the interest of those who wanted to expand the workforce. So it was a coalition of women's groups, business groups, educators who began to document what early childhood education was, that you don't just want to warehouse a kid, that it should be part of an educational program for child care, because early development is crucial development. And so you had a convergence of a coalition. See, to get things done, you have to find mutual need.
There you go.
It has to be desirable, achievable, and affordable. But then you have to identify what's the mutual need. Women needed someone to care for their children. Educators wanted to be sure, as did mothers, safe, secure, and educational. And business wanted to make sure that their workforce could come, that they would be reliable, and at the same time, they saw the benefits. So we put it together. And this is why you take a corporation very prominent in our city, PNC Bank. Their focus in philanthropic activity is in child care and also something called Judy Centers, an architect of Steny Hoyer's wife, Judy, another, God rest her soul, but where you would have both an education and the important wraparound services like early detection and screening for eyeglasses and hearing. What would be the impediments to learning? So it was mutual need in a conversation of civility, and then identifying those things first, which were achievable and affordable, then building on that to what was even more desirable.
Nestor, this is a master class in how to make government work. Baltimore Positive, can't think of a better place to take a break. Senator Barbara Mikulski coming to you from Johns Hopkins University.
Back for more WNST Towson Baltimore after this.
Okay.